Matthew 21, verse 33. We're talking about the types of the Old Testament. This is the beginning of the studying of the offerings and their meanings. And before we can understand the offerings and their meanings, we have to see that they don't have anything to do with us. That they have to do with Jesus Christ. And that mystery, that capacity that in Him we are dead, that and there's a new thing has been created, is what really the Bible is all about. What I want you to see here tonight is that Jesus Christ failed His mission after the flesh. He failed to redeem the human race. If you don't know that, you're going to be deceived at every corner. You're going to be deceived by, and this parable is the description of that failure. So that now a new race of beings was created, and that's what the entire New Testament is about. It's about this new creation, a new race, a new people that doesn't have anything to do with you or I. It has to do with us just simply being vessels for that new race. But if we think that Christ came to do something for me or for us, and that He succeeded in it, then we have really some holy theology. Holy not spelled with H-O-L-Y, but holy like with holes in it. We have to conceive of a God that is impotent, a God that has at least another God that is at least as strong as He is. We have to conceive of a God that permits, for those He loves, abject starvation. We have to theorize or have in our theology a God that allows the most terrible suffering there is in the universe. You understand what I'm saying? Or else something else is going on. So this is a parable about this idea that possibly the whole human race is playing the wrong game. Okay? Here another parable. There was a certain householder who has planted a vineyard and hedged it round about and digged a winepress in it and built a tower and let it out to husbandmen and went into a far country. When the time of the fruit drew near, he sent his servants to the husbandmen that they might receive the fruits of it. And the husbandman took his servants and beat one and killed another and stoned another. And again he sent other servants greater than the first, and they did unto them likewise. But last of all he sent unto them his son, saying, they will reverence my son. But when the husbandmen saw the son, they said among themselves, this is the heir. Come, let us kill him, let us seize on his inheritance. And they caught him and cast him out of the vineyard and slew him. And when the Lord of the vineyard cometh, what will you do unto those husbandmen? The Pharisees, they said unto him, he will miserably destroy those wicked men, and will let out his vineyard unto other husbandmen, which shall render unto him the fruits in their seasons. And Jesus said unto them, did you never read in the scriptures? The stone which the builders rejected, the same has become the head of the corner. This is the Lord's doing, and it is marvelous in our eyes. Therefore I say unto you, the kingdom of God shall be taken from you and given to a people bringing forth the fruits thereof. And whosoever shall fall on the stone shall be broken. But on whomsoever it shall fall, or the stone shall fall, it will grind him to powder. And when the chief priests and Pharisees had heard his parable, they perceived that he spake of them. And sought to lay hands on him, but they feared the multitude, because they took him for a prophet.
It's
Now, you understand the same thing is true now in modern religion. If you believe the Baptist or you believe certain denominations, they'll say, well, that was the Jews that were the wicked ones, and now they give it to us good ones, us good Christians. That's not what it says. He took the kingdom from the human race. And it began another thing, a new thing, a new creation that had nothing to do with. Now again, the human race, we went through this last week, the human race was first, and as we searched the scriptures, the human race was first tested in innocency. And what happened was the fall. Then they were tested without law. What happened was the flood. And they were tested with the restraints of human authority, the Noachian law. And what happened? Idolatry, massive idolatry. Then he chose one family, gave them the perfect law, and sent his prophets. They beat and stoned them. And finally he sent his son, who was cast out and crucified. All failed. Now the resurrection is the only thing that counts. If you don't see that, then you will believe that his resurrection had something to do with the flesh. And that's why it says over and over, flesh and blood shall not glory in his presence. No flesh shall see his presence. No, you cannot proceed to God unless you came from God. But we've got a theology that is rampant in the Western world called the salvation of the isolated self. And it doesn't matter whether you put Christian on it or not. It's rampant in our society, and it's based on the worth, the self-worth of the individual. And it's a lie. And anybody really that's honest with themselves know it. They know it. So, I mean, that's why the Tiltons of this world thrive. Resurrection didn't have anything to do with you or I. It has to do with the flesh, with a new thing, a new creation, a bride, a body he has prepared. So now resurrection is the only thing that counts. And the way that this is important to you is that unless you know this, you will keep thinking that you're supposed to improve, that you're supposed to learn some stupid lesson. Or you're supposed to learn something so that you, quote unquote, hide the Word of God in your heart. Well, what happens if you can't read?
I never could understand that if Christ was, we're supposed to, emulate him or try to be like him, he ended up crucified. I mean, it's like...
Yeah, well, you were smart.
I'm not just following him. It's like, I am following him to the cross.
That's right. That's the only place that you can follow him to. What happens after that is his business. That's what constitutes freedom. But flesh is no more to be tested. He's not doing anything. He's not going to do anything with flesh. All things will continue as they were from the beginning until the end comes. And it's only those with eyes to see will know it. When the end comes, they're not going to play spiritual yo-yo. Time will end. Flesh is it's no more to be tried. It's a settled thing. It's settled. It's completely settled. It's certified. It's sealed. That flesh is hopeless, lost. And if we had any theology that even approximated what the first century church was, we would know that your baptism sealed the fact that the flesh was lost and hopeless. You don't need to try to get better. You don't need to try to change. Why do you gad about so much to change yourself? The baptism is simply the death and the burial of the flesh after you've accepted your crucifixion. Abandon yourself. Pick up your cross. If you haven't been buried after 4 days, you start to smell. There's a whole lot of... The worst kind of smell there is in the universe is self-righteousness. The only ones that can't smell it are the ones that are in it.
Not only is it so hard to let go of yourself?
Because you're evil. You're the Antichrist. You are a child of the devil, and the lusts of your father you will do. You can't improve. You can't let go of yourself. You can die. That's what the cross is. You can't let go. You understand? It's a settled thing. You can't do anything. And if you try to do something, then you will fall into the deception of self-righteousness, and you won't be able to smell the stench of dead flesh because you will be in it. Am I communicating? Now, this then becomes this grand conspiracy. It's a conspiracy of self-righteous fulfillment, self-fulfillment. What happens? It works until somebody comes along and exposes it. The moment it's exposed, it's dead. I don't care how much you argue, I don't care how much you resist, I don't care how much. Once your self-righteousness has been exposed, a death process starts. It's inexorable. No matter how much makeup you put on to try to be something, no matter how much you try to change yourself, no matter how much you protest, a death process has started in your consciousness. That's what's happened. This grand conspiracy with, I mean, unless we're picking on Tilton, with the Tiltons, the idea that he was proclaiming this grand conspiracy of self-realization, betterment of the self at the expense of God. And everybody was buying it. He had 880,000 people that were sending him money. But it's exposed. All the protestations, all the legal arguments, all the crap, all the things, it's inexorable, it's guaranteed, it's a sure bet, you can bet the farm, he's dead meat. Well, what about you? I'm just as evil, but I already know I'm dead. I'm not trying to be anything. That's the meaning of the cross, and that's the only meaning of the cross. And unless there is a resurrection, there is no hope. And unless there's a resurrection in you, there's no hope.
It was like that dead cow was not going to get better.
Yeah, we had a field trip in bananas.
Yeah, I could see that.
Flies were not
going to wake up on it. Who was here? Who was on the dead cow field trip? Were you?
The worst time I've ever smelled.
Put a little makeup on it, it'll look better.
We found a dead cow on at Rick's ranch.
It was heavily biodegraded.
It was a very skinny cow because all of the maggots had eaten them, all the flesh out, and there was just bone and the skin on top of it.
Yeah.
And it smelled like really, really bad. This was the second bananas field trip.
Yeah, the first one was the dog vomit.
The first one was to go watch dog vomit. Yeah. The second one was to see a dead cow.
I can't wait for the third one.
Where can you go from a dead cow
banana?
I don't know.
Oh, he'll come up with something. Yeah. Don't worry.
That must have been a real joy.
But that cow that's laying there dead, smelling, maggots crawling out of it, is you. And I don't care how much education you try to get. I don't care how much makeup you try to put on. I don't care how much you try to better yourself. I don't care how much you try to talk to yourself into being something. I don't care how many Tiltons you go to. You're dead. Your only hope is that there was a resurrection in your earthen vessel. That's why it's Christ in you, the hope of glory. Not you becoming anything. No longer concerned the slightest bit with activity. You're only concerned with receptivity. That's the thing we're trying to let Harry see clearly for all these years. He still thinks that he has to do something.
It's really wild talking about that, because the other day when I went to get our AIDS test, I mean, you don't go do that without thinking you're dead meat. I mean, you think it, you know it. And I was laying in bed the night before, I couldn't sleep. And like you said, there's no options. If you have it, you have it. And it's not like, you know, you can get away. You know, I get a shot, I'll get better. I mean, I'll take something. Or I mean, you got it. And
well, but stop and think a minute. All of AIDS is age speeded up.
Exactly.
It's time. Harry's dying of age.
Yeah.
We'll die of that.
But the other thing too is you think
it's no like good deal.
What would I do? What would I do? And really, you wouldn't do
nothing
anything.
Nothing different.
That's what I'm saying. You wouldn't do anything. You just you wouldn't.
You just know it was being speeded.
You'd say it's stuff, and you wouldn't take shit that you didn't feel like you had to take.
Yeah, you don't play stupid games. You don't try to justify yourself. You don't become totally insufferable.
You definitely try to live in the moment.
Yeah, that's all you got.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Maybe start like, hey, you
know,
we
got them now.
Yeah.
I did. Hey.
Now, God has a people now, but his own right arm has gotten the victory. His own Zeruah, right arm is the word Zeruah, the seed, the sperm of God has gotten him the victory. Not flesh becoming anything, flesh is dust. That's the sin, that's the meaning of it, that's why the parable. He took the dust and he formed it and he breathed into the dust. So the dust could walk around a little bit. But if you're from the dust to the dust, you're going to return. There is no thing. That's why Jesus said, unless you came from the Father, you cannot return to the Father. What? I didn't come to the Father. I didn't come from. You know, I can search this scripture 24 hours a day, and I don't see my name in there anywhere. I see Jesus. I see the bride. And by the grace of God, if he chooses, I am a member of that bride, a cell in the bride, if you will. And my will has to be swallowed up in the will of Christ so that that bride can be formed. Not me becoming anything. That's ludicrous. We're begotten again, born again, a new thing. We're begotten again by the resurrection of Christ. Not to make, you know, it'd be, can you think of anything more insufferable than an improved Lee?
New and improved.
Getting better day by day.
I don't think we can think of that.
Huh?
I just can't get a hold of that one.
No.
Well, I mean, if you can't get a hold of that, you try getting a hold of a getting better Sherry. Yeah. Sherry taken out to infinity.
Marilyn Quayle.
Marilyn Quayle. What more can you say?
There she is. Ladies and gentlemen. The second lady.
You've even scared Sherry, though. I hope you're happy.
Even gives me the shivers.
Hardest working woman of all.
Can you see we are begotten again by the resurrection? We are no longer of the thing that it's gone. No longer what we do or what we are, but of what he is. In us, as us. This is the gospel. And it's not you gaining riches, it's that you already have the riches. You own all things. Why? Because you're a co-inheritor with him. Does that mean, you don't worry about it. Can you see what the self-seeking theology does to the, it's like pure evil. It's a settled thing. Man was lost. And hopeless after they killed his son. It was a done deal. They killed the Son of God. They killed God. And you kill him daily. Any attempt to better yourself is crucifying the Son of God afresh. For me to live is Christ, to die is gain. Whatsoever things that are gain to me are a loss to Christ. Do you understand? Do you really understand? Whatever things are gained to you are a loss to Christ. It's not a very difficult sense to understand. It's just so massive, the implications are so incredible, that to understand them would cost you your life. But to hear them and not act on them, or not to do anything, or to continue on in your own way, causes the most misery there is on the face of the earth.
Well, I do know that I try to do something myself and it never works out right. You have to learn to depend on him whether you want to or not. You end up depending on him.
Well, you have to learn. I mean, it's not you and Jesus anymore. I mean, that's... It's just him. 1 Peter 3. Verse 18. For Christ also hath once suffered for the sins, for the just, for the unjust, that he might bring us to God, being put to death in the flesh, but quickened by the Spirit, by which also he went and preached unto the spirits in prison. What does that mean? Means we should start a prison ministry, a loose stare at jail. The word prison there is the word Hades. Hades is the word for Gehenna. Gehenna is what we call hell. But as we've studied so often, the word Gehenna is simply the dump for the New Jerusalem. Which sometime were disobedient, when once the long suffering of God waited in the days of Noah, while the ark was preparing, wherein a few, that is 8 souls, were saved by water. The like figure whereunto even baptism doth also now save us, not the putting away of the filth of the flesh, but the answer of a good conscience toward God by the resurrection of Jesus Christ. Do you understand? The only way you can have a good conscience is by the resurrection of Jesus Christ. When you're, what are you going to do? When you're standing at the judgment seat, are you going to try to say anything else?
I didn't run that stop sign. I mean, it was a...
just a little
it just was a, it was for cars. It wasn't for me.
The estimates vary from 25 million to 250 million people that were alive at the time of the ark. And 8 souls were saved.
That's something I never saw before, that they were saved by the water. I mean, all I've ever thought about is the world was destroyed by the water. But I've never thought that the water was the agency. It's saved. It's the 8 souls.
Because they were in the ark, and that ark is Christ. Go to Galatians 2.
It's interesting to know what the ratio of 8 to 250 million would be as compared to 144,000 to what it would be if
the end of time.
Don't run that rabbit. There's no cheese at that tunnel. What's even more interesting to speculate on? No, speculate on this one. Every time a male ejaculates, there's 150 million sperm cells released. In a lifetime, how many of those sperm cells ever reach the egg? And how many of those eggs that reach the egg ever come to maturity?
It's because of one of those that I'm a
grandma. Well, I mean, that's immaterial. The idea, though, is that the rarity of the message is as rare as that. In the type, in the figure, in a man's lifetime, there are billions of sperm cells released. What are you interested in? Sperm cells. Have you named them? You like set up like educational funds for them? No. It's only the rarest of thing that happens, and one of them joins that egg and loses its identity, and the two become a new creation. That's the picture of the mystery of God. And that's a picture of the rarity of the understanding of that mystery. It's the rarity of a people being willing to pick up their cross and abandon themselves. Galatians 2, verse 16. Thank you. Knowing that a man is not justified by the works of the law, but by the faith of Jesus Christ, even we have believed in Jesus Christ, that we might be justified by the faith of Christ, and not by the works of the law, for by the works of the law shall no flesh be justified. And again, you understand the prepositions there. I mean, that you start out by believing in Christ. It's you and him, separate. But finally, you must come to the place where you are justified by the faith of him and by no other thing. There can be no other attempt at self-justification in your life. There can never be a victim. You could... All your victim, your tendency towards victimhood has to go down the tubes. And the test of it is, the test of whether you believe and whether you're justified by the faith of Christ, is whether or not there's never again self-justification, there's never again victimhood, and that you have forgiven everyone from the heart. Those are the three tests. And you no longer need the praise of man. If while we seek to be justified by Christ, we ourselves are found sinners, is therefore Christ the minister of sin? God forbid. For if I build again the things which I destroyed, I make myself a transgressor. Do you understand what that means? If you go back and try to build again the things that brought you to Christ, which is failure, and you go back and try to rebuild it and put God's name now on your idolatry, you make yourself a transgressor. For I, through the law, am dead to the law that I might live unto God. I could no more go back to the business world than a man on the moon. Now, does that mean that some of you shouldn't be? I don't care. That's not the issue. The issue is, for me, that had to fail. You know, this isn't that we don't make, okay, we make a rule. That's not what this is. That's what's saying, if I build again the things which brought me to the revelation of Christ, then I make myself, it's not a transgressor, I make myself the transgressor. The transgressor is the evil one, the Antichrist. And now listen carefully. For I through the law am dead to the law that I might live unto God. I am crucified with Christ. Nevertheless, I live. Yet not I, but Christ liveth in me. And the life which I now live in the flesh, I live by the faith of the Son of God, who loved me and gave himself for me. Who's the me then? You understand? He loved me and gave himself for me. Me has now been transformed into the bride. He loved the bride. That's what the message of the cosmos, that's what the message of the cosmos is. I do not frustrate the grace of God, for if righteousness come by the law, then Christ is dead in vain. In the Old Testament, it was circumcision. You were circumcised on the eighth day after you were born as the male. In the New Testament, it's baptism. Circumcision was the type, the parable, the picture that put away the filth of the flesh, was the old system aimed at, it assumed that, circumcision assumed that the flesh could be improved. You understand that? By circumcision, man, as represented in the seed of Abraham according to the flesh, was in the flesh. He was then taken into the covenant with the hope that by circumcision the flesh could be improved. That's what we still believe. We think by becoming a believer, flesh can be improved. It cannot be. For us, recognize that flesh cannot be improved, that we cannot make plans, that we cannot take thought for tomorrow. We cannot take thought for our own lives. We cannot take thought for what things we put on. We cannot take thought for any aspect of our own life. Don't learn how to take better thought. Can you imagine? Anybody that was baptized has sealed the certainty. Represents the death and the burial of the flesh. It shows that the flesh is incurable. Only by the resurrection can the new creation come to God. We must come to this place. We must come to this understanding that by one offering he has perfected forever them that are sanctified. Well, that doesn't look perfect. I'm so sick of Pharisees. I'm so sick of the self-righteous little twits. I'm so furious that I have agreed to be silent for a time. That's what I'm furious at. I mean, I feel like a caged beast when I've agreed to be silent.
Do you agree this with the lawyers?
And produces a primetime life. Keep your mouth shut for a while. Only let us fight your battle.
Well, aren't they kind of recovering in this situation? I mean,
it's easy for you to say.
Shut up. Speaker, oh, grab out the floor.
I've been waiting 8 years for that.
If he could say, like,
I don't know what I was thinking.
If he can finish it.
Yeah.
What's the purpose of preaching? Make converts? No. Dallas Cowboys makes a whole lot more converts than most preachers do. Mm-hmm. Well, they're followers.
Oh, yeah, I see followers.
Fans.
I bet you meant more people came to God because of the Cowboys. No, I don't think so.
What's the difference between a cowboy banner on your wall or a picture of Jesus with some palm branches?
What's the purpose of preaching? What's the purpose of preaching?
It's called to.
But only maybe it's for your own good right now.
What's the purpose of preaching?
Die faster.
The purpose of preaching, if you believe John the Baptist, who was the best preacher in the universe, is to bring forth fruit necessary for repentance. That's all. That's the only purpose of communication, to bring forth fruit necessary for repentance. You are called, as a believer, to profess publicly the worthlessness of the flesh. All flesh, all value systems, all ways, anything, anything that you think about anything, the worthlessness of it.
You just mentioned one of the things that is an evident sign of perdition according to these other guys. The fact that they chose the words that we used about challenging all pre-existing ideas and mocking anything that presents itself as important. They selected those words to put up on the screen as evidence of perdition.
Idiots. Perverted idiots.
It's like those words you just said. And I thought a reporter could just go crazy. Oh, he's professing, going out and just mocking everything, but those are the very words, the very things that got Christ crucified.
Bingo. Do you understand that the idea of professing that the flesh is getting better or can get better is universal? I mean, that if you say that you profess the worthlessness of the flesh, that everything in the universe is your enemy then? There is no friend. All religions, all philosophies, all systems of economics, all science, all psychology, all sociology, all aim at the improvement of the flesh. The only people that understand what we're talking about are people of the way. Christ in you, the hope of glory. Nothing else. The exclusive hope. And it's lived so it's tested. Spoken so it's tested. The mystery that has been hid from all generations, but is now made manifest to the saints. Christ in you. All the glory. There's nothing to add to it. There's nothing. But it cannot be understood by anyone unless you know the fruitlessness of all things. Otherwise, it'll be Christ in you plus this. Or Christ in you, but I'm keeping this ace in the hole over here. Or Christ in you, but I need something else. God has made by or of him, by his Son, a people. Begotten or born by the resurrection of Christ, who now through grace are a witness not of what they were or are, but of what he is. And that can only be witnessed by abandoning yourself, by picking up your cross. Do you understand that? You can't duplicate it. You can't imitate it. If he isn't lived in you as you prophesy, whatever you have, whatever's there, you give it freely. And he's nothing. You might as well find out tonight. You're sitting around being careful. Oh, I didn't want to say that. I was afraid I'd hurt somebody's feelings. And, oh, you should be a nice boy, and you should smile, and you should do this. And gag me with a spoon. I didn't choose to be the way I am. You didn't choose to be the way you are. But if you are measuring yourself, then by definition you're pure evil. If you're calculating how and what you say and when you say it, and you say it for effect, you say it to be accepted, you try to say it so that some response will take place as you say it as an offering. From God's standpoint, that is worse than mass murdering, because you have, it's not worse for you, but it's worse if a Gentile mass murders, that's one thing. But if a believer considers lightly the resurrection, that's everything. Now, all of the types in the scriptures, all of the types in the world foreshadow this great truth of Christ in you, the hope of glory. As we studied, as we saw, it was the original meaning of the signs of the zodiac. It was the original meaning of the Great Pyramid. It was the original meaning of all of the alphabets. But everything has been perverted to an instrument of self-realization, including this Bible.
What is the type when Elijah and Moses were long dead, but they were seen speaking of Christ?
There is one time.
But would that be the resurrection of the isolated self, since they were recognized as who they were?
No. There was the type of the law and the prophets. All of the law, Moses represents the law, and Elijah represents the prophets. The law and the prophets. And he spake of his death. That's all.
So were they not spiritual beings? And they were just there for our information, to be written down for our information and food for nothing, if it's just Christ and the bride?
Not only poof for nothing, they were held for that period. It's just like the two witnesses, the two men that never died in the Bible. Who are they?
Enoch
and Elijah.
The E-guys. And one stands for what?
One is prophecy and one is wisdom. And they're the two that are standing. They're the witnesses in the temple now. I mean, they have but one function. They're just, it's a picture. It tells us a story. God's mystery is in 1,000 pictures.
Yeah, that's when you talk about
it.
You know, man sees one, God sees another.
Right. I mean, we try to make it linear, you know. We thought, well, it must mean this, and if it means that, then it has to mean this over here. That's not what he's saying. It's like a stained glass, a huge stained glass window that can only be revealed when light comes through it. And it, boom, and there's a spot over here, and you reveal, and it's playing there, and you reveal that, and you reveal that, and you reveal that, and as you see him, you shall be like him, for you shall see him as he is. But we try to make a theology out of it. We try to make it linear. And that's why the linear thought is why man has denigrated so rapidly. Again, let me remind you of something. In the Sanhedrin, to be a member of the Sanhedrin, you had to be able to translate in 70 languages. You had to be able to argue every point in the law and win both ways. Kids, when they were 7 years old, had memorized the book of Proverbs and could hold discourse on it. By the time they were 12, they had memorized the book of Leviticus and understood the types. We are so ignorant, and yet we don't know we're ignorant, and that's what makes us really ignorant. And we're ignorant because we have refused refused revelation and sold out for deductive reasoning, linear thought. We become technologists. Go to Galatians 4. Verse 19. My little children, of whom I travail in birth again until Christ be formed in you, I desire to be present with you now and to change my voice, for I stand in doubt of you. Tell me, you that desire to be under the law. And again, the desire to be under the law is the desire to know, to have somebody tell you what to do. The desire to be under the law is to have the desire to know it's going to happen tomorrow. The desire to be under the law is the desire to take thought for tomorrow, to take thought for any of these activities of life. That's the desire to be under the law. Do you understand that? Tell me, you that be desire to be under the law. Do you not hear the law? For it is written that Abraham had two sons, the one by a bondmaid, and the other by a free woman. But he who was of the bondwoman was born after the flesh. Who is that? Ishmael. He was born after Hagar. Now Hagar was no slouch. Hagar was the daughter of Pharaoh. She was the best. She represented the best that the world could be. But her offspring, no matter how good she was, she was a bondwoman and her offspring was a slave. He who was born of the bondwoman was born after the flesh, but he of the free woman was by promise. The free woman was Sarah, and the child of the free woman was Isaac. Which things are an allegory? I mean, it's a pretty big deal. And he's saying this thing is an allegory, a parable, a trope. It's something that tells us something else. Which things are an allegory? For these are the two covenants. The one from Mount Sinai, which is the law, the Torah, which gendereth to bondage, which is Hagar. Do you understand that? For this Hagar is Mount Sinai in Arabia, and answereth to Jerusalem, which now is, and is in bondage with her children. Anytime you want law, where is your Jerusalem that now is? But Jerusalem, which is above, is free, which is the mother of us all. The new Jerusalem, that's the overriding reality wherever our foot touches, because it is without time. That's the mother, and that's what makes us free. But Jerusalem, which is above, is free, which is the mother of us all, for it is written, Rejoice, thou barren that bearest not, bring forth and cry, thou that travailest not, for the desolate hath many more children than she which hath a husband. Don't be afraid of the numbers. The desolate has many, many more children than she which has the true husband. Understand that? Don't ever play the numbers game. Don't ever believe because somebody else believes. Don't be confused by numbers. Somebody's wrong. You understand? There's no. Can you accept that there's no such thing as subjective truth for a minute? Somebody's wrong on these equations. But Jerusalem, which is above, is free, which is the mother of us all. For it is written, Rejoice, thou barren that bearest not, break forth and cry, thou that travailest not, for the desolate hath many more children than she which has a husband. Now we, brethren, as Isaac was, are the children of promise. But as then he that was born after the flesh persecuted him that was born after the spirit, even so it is now. Nevertheless, what saith the scripture? Cast out the bondwoman and her son. For the son of the bondwoman shall not be heir with the son of the free woman. So then, brethren, we are not children of the bondwoman, but of the free. Now again, the reason I want you to see this is they're saying that the whole of the law, or Sarah and Hagar and Moses and Ishmael and Isaac, which are the center points of the Jewish religion, are nothing more than an allegory. Joseph, we'll see. Joseph was an allegory. He's the eldest son of the best-loved wife. And again, two wives again. Leah, the elder wife, had all her children before Rachel. The younger had any. Again, it's we see he was sold into slavery, just as Christ was sold into the world. He was betrayed, just as Christ was betrayed. So we see Christ in Joseph, and we see him clearly. The son loved, beloved of the father, is cast out by his brethren, the children of the elder, the eldest wife, which is, he's cast into Egypt, always the type of the world. And there, after a season of suffering and shame, he is exalted to be head of the kingdom. Again, Noah and the ark. Peter says it is the type of the mystical death and resurrection of the church in Christ. First, the old world had to be destroyed. And there was one faithful family, spend time in an ark. A new world then comes forth in beauty after the destruction. One family or tribe are brought from one world into a new world in an ark. The ark is the only place of safety. Imagine being in that ark for a year and 17 days. Well, that was just an allegory. Okay, if it's just an allegory, then believe you're in the allegory. With two of every animal. Hmm?
I'm in an allegory.
You are an allegory. You're a type. The ark with its burden rests on the mountain, the new world, months before the new world could be seen. Just as Christ our ark has rested on the mountain. The one mountain, with all the redeemed in him. And then for a while, only the waters of judgment are seen. But with the eye, with the spiritual eye, we see that it's a done deal now. That's why we must see it's finished now. But I want you to, again, the ark is the type. Israel is a type. The Levites are a type. The law is a type. What? A type to what? A type to reveal a mystery.
That was the thing about that Melito of Sardi deal that we read, is
Not once was anything personal mentioned in that whole deal. It was it was something larger than him, than the people listening.
Yeah.
It was always bigger.
In all of those that we just talked about, it was all in Genesis. And then in Exodus, we see the story of redemption. We see God's seed in bondage and God's plagues to cause his seed to reject the gods of the world. We see the Passover, the redemption, the elect family, the shoes on our feet, staff in hand, loins girded, standing by night, waiting within the house, the doorpost sprinkled by the blood, the destroying angel shed abroad in judgment, the death of the firstborn, the judging of the pride of the world. At this point, the only thing that's known about the blood is that it's safety. You don't know any of the other mysteries. To learn anything more with regard to the uses of the blood, Israel must leave the world. And for you to understand anything else about the blood, except that this sits on the doorpost, you have to leave the world, because none of the sacrifices can be made in the world system. So this is you, born in the world, trying to get to the land of Goshen, the best of Egypt. The plagues come and you fail, and then you cross the Red Sea in baptism, and you wander for a while until the law is given. You have to get down to this point, down here, before you begin to understand the tabernacle, before you begin to understand the sacrifices and what the real purpose of the blood is. When we see, and the more we understand it, the more we understand the symbols of Christianity, the wine and the bread, when we finally get to, hopefully Stealth will someday understand it, that the wine is the drink offering and the bread is the meal offering. And then maybe bananas will have a chance, but again, to be willing to understand more of the mysteries of the blood and the mysteries of the types of the blood, you have to be willing to go into a place where there's no options. That's the definition of the wilderness, when there are no options.
So you're in the hall.
The law, purpose of the law is to shut up your mouth. But really, it's to shut up your mind talk.
And that's why you can't do righteousness
from it. Right. It has but one purpose. That's what the Pharisees take little pieces of the law and wear them as little jewels on themselves. But the purpose of the law, if you believe Romans, is to shut up your mouth. And it's to shut up your mind talk. Right. In here, though, there's no knowledge of the burnt offering or difference among sin or trespass or meal or peace offering in the world. There's no labor, no showbread, no candlestick, no knowledge of the Holy of Holies, no knowledge of the work of the Levites, no knowledge of the work of the priests. None of that is in the world, but can only be learned when everyone is ready to leave the world and get it behind it. So all of Exodus is a picture of redemption. Your redemption from the world. Not how to get more goodies in the world. Can you think of anything worse? This is a picture, this book, this map, is a picture of your subconscious mind going from the world to the mercy seat. And it's inexorable. It's not a matter of, well, I don't want to make the trip. If you don't make the trip, you die.
Yeah,
the question is, why don't we do this? If we're going to get from here to the land of Goshen, let's just get in a boat and go over here.
That's called drugs. That's called alcohol and drugs.
Well, once you leave this, then you can sing the Song of Moses, and it's really a neat song. But it's, "Thou and thy mercy, O Lord," this is a part of it, "hast led forth thy people which thou hast redeemed. Fear shall fall on the inhabitants of Canaan till the people pass over who thou hast purchased. Thou shalt bring them in." So in Exodus, we see Christ as the redemption, as the tabernacle, as the rearer of the tabernacle, as the tabernacle itself, as the substance and subjects of its services, as the guide of his people, and as the essence of the logos of the law. But primarily we see it as being redeemed. We're out of here. But I mean, that's really what that's what the appealing thing is. But people will, they sell out in here. They sell out for all our stupid little idols and value systems. You can't leave. That's what the plagues come. All these 10 terrible plagues come on you to destroy your idolatry. Not so you can, oh, poor me. Right. Or you can't go. Can you imagine? There's 97-pound hailstones falling around us tonight in the spirit. There are 97-pound hailstones. And these are weird hailstones because they do something. I wish Mr. Science was here, but because they're so big and so weird, and the particular thing that had to happen to make them be that big. No, they have the appearance of fire as they fall through the earth.
Like you're getting a flash Gordon. Hot hail.
It's hot hail. And it sets on fire. They're one talent each, and they set on fire everything they hit. If you believe Isaiah, their purpose is to destroy your refuge of lies. All right. That's enough for tonight.
I don't feel like talking about it. First time it dawned on me what it is that's so seductive about linear time, why I keep believing in linear time. And what it is, in linear time, I never have to deal with now. I never have to deal with what is. I have the luxury of dealing with what was and what's going to be, and I don't ever have to see the picture. I don't ever have to understand. I don't ever have to see my evil.
Yeah.
I can always
here. That's why it says
there's a place to escape too in linear time.
First John says, "Hereby know ye the spirit of truth and the spirit of error. Every spirit that confesses that Jesus Christ is come in the flesh is of God. And every spirit that confesseth not that Jesus Christ is come in the flesh is not of God, but of that Antichrist. The Antichrist confesses that he did come in the flesh, and the Antichrist confesses that he will come in the flesh. But it's only the spirit of God that confesses that he is come in the flesh now, therefore it's finished. There's nothing to do." And it's a very simple test.
Isn't the illusion of choice in what Harry just said?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Tonight's one of those nights when I really had that feeling that it's like these words were written for me. It's like everything you've said.
You know, that's interesting that you said that because in Tilton, when he talks, he will actually use the words, "He has come in the flesh." He'll use those words. But yet, everything about the program, when you watch, and everything about the theology is these miracles have taken place, and we are going to get something. He's never there. He's never in the moment. It's always one or the other. It's a bait and switch.
It's the human race.
Everything.